Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So I want to begin today's show with the 2020 defensive lineman, Warren Brinson, who's decommitted from the University of Georgia. And I'm going to try to explain why I don't think that Brinson's decommitment represents bad news for UGA. And I say that not knowing yet how good of a player Warren Brinson's going to end up being. He could end up being a very good player, could really blossom during his final high school season at IMG Academy, or he could maybe not end up being that level of prospect. My opinion about the Brinson story, the decommitment, the status that he had before that as a UGA commitment, is not really based yet on how good of a player I believe Brinson to be, because I think that for the most part, we don't yet know what kind of prospect this is going to turn out to be. In a lot of cases, when it comes to 2020 recruits, there's still a little bit of to be determined in terms of what their ultimate status is going to be. To me, though, the overall story with Warren Brinson, which what people should take from this, because Brinson did indeed decommit from the program. You can read more of that story at DogNation.com. Jeff Sintel wrote a good piece on that yesterday explaining the new offers that Brinson's got and kind of why maybe he wants to shop around as an open, uncommitted player. You can read more from that with Jeff Sintel. But the part that I want to talk about is the bigger picture part of this. And I've told you before, I'm really fascinated by not just Georgia getting the best players that it can get, but the overall process of recruiting. I love watching the way that the recruiting process plays out and works out. I love the science behind all this, or in some cases, I guess it's more art than science. But either way, it's a pretty fascinating story to tell. And to kind of explain what I believe is going on with Warren Brinson, I think you have to go way back into the past. Let me go all the way back to National Signing Day 2016 for a moment. This was Kirby Smart's first signing day with the program. And at one point, he was asked a question from Chip Towers of, hey, how do you feel you did in getting the program some more bigger players, bigger offensive linemen, bigger defensive linemen? Now, Georgia had a pretty good haul of defensive linemen for its 2016 class. So with Kirby's answer, he fixates for a moment on offensive tackles. Now, I could probably do 20 minutes on just what Kirby Smart says in this, approximately 60-second clip. But I do think what Kirby said then in 2016 about offensive tackles, believe it or not, sets us up to understand what's also going on with defensive linemen in 2020 as well. So listen to this, and then after it's done, I'll explain what this has to do with the 2020 recruiting cycle. Here's Kirby Smart saying, hey, Kirby, did you get enough big players in your first signing class? Enough big defensive linemen? Enough big offensive linemen? And Kirby gave a very candid answer. Listen.
We want some offensive tackles. If you said, what's the number one need going into 2017? It's going to be offensive tackles, what we need. I mean, that's the most efficient area on our front, guys. But I think if you comb the country and you ask every SEC coach, he's going to say we're most efficient at offensive tackle because it's the rarest find. You want a 6'5", 6'6 kid, they don't grow on trees. Those guys are just different difference makers, and you've got to try to target those early. And a lot of those relationships are already established. They're being established now with 2017s and 2018s. So when you come in, that's one of the toughest positions, I think, to recover at, and that's one of the toughest positions to have that one-on-one relationship that your O-line and your head coach wants to have with players. So that's probably the most the area I would say if you're most disappointed in is on the offensive lines. We've got to improve the offensive lines.
I just love that quote, that statement from Kirby Smart, first of all, because all these years later, think about how prophetic Smart's words turned out to be. We want to get better along our offensive line, and over the course of the next couple of recruiting cycles, that is indeed what Georgia did to the point now. I think it's the overwhelming strength of this team, at least in terms of a single position group. No position group's better than the offensive line. Kirby Smart challenged his coaching staff in 2016 to do that, and they essentially went right out there and did that. But that's not the point that I want to make today. The point that I want to make today, even though back in 2016, Kirby Smart was talking about offensive linemen, what he says is also relevant in 2020 for defensive linemen, because Kirby said, hey, you got to target big players early. There are just fewer of them. It's a rare skill set to be a talented big man. Therefore, you got to target those guys early, and you've got to establish relationships with them that can last over the course of years. If you want to be in on the best big players, offensive and defensive linemen, you've got to have long-range relationships that are worked on over the course of years, and you've got to identify who those targets are going to be well before the date of their signing day. In the case of Warren Brinson, even though he's decommitting from the Georgia program right now, I think the Brinson story is an example of Kirby Smart doing exactly what he said he was going to set out to do. target early, make relationships, and work over the long haul with the biggest and best players that are out there. It remains to be seen how good of a player Warren Brinson's going to end up being, even on the date of his signing at the close of the 2020 cycle. We don't yet know what kind of prospect he's going to blossom into, but we know that he was good enough to be targeted by Georgia early, and we know that in that process, Georgia's just got to cast a really wide net. I think it did that effectively with Brinson. In fact, let me let you hear Brinson talking to our own Jeff Sintel. This was from a few weeks ago about a commitment that's actually been, you know, kind of a long-range deal. Brinson had been committed to Georgia for a little while, and he talked about, you know, what it was that he liked about Georgia and the, from Brinson's own perspective, the way that Georgia had established a long-range relationship with him. Here is Warren Brinson. Listen to the way that he speaks and be reminded of what Kirby Smart said the program was going to set out to do with big players. Players of Brinson's caliber. Listen to this.
I just love how Trey Scott does things. I like him as a person. Like he's a great person, and I feel like his coaching style, the same as a person, can help me grow in character and on the field. Like, and that's the best thing. In Georgia, I want to go to school for engineering. Georgia has a great engineering program, so I know that would be a great thing to do.
Did you know you were going to commit driving out and to this visit, or what kind of?
Oh yeah, I knew I was going to commit. I've been thinking about it, praying about it for the last 2 weeks. And Thursday night, I walk out, you know, I'm back in Savannah, so I was going out with my friends and stuff. I come back in the house, my parents were home, I walk into the kitchen, and their TV was left on, and I heard on the TV, commit to the G, and that was like a sign. I was like, I knew it's something I got to do.
So let me kind of tie all this together. Warren Brinson decommits from the program, and if he stays gone forever, it remains to be seen how big of a loss this is going to be for UGA. But the way in which that Georgia has gone about recruiting Brinson and the other defensive lineman that's chased after and the other offensive lineman that's chased after actually, I think, is a really good sign for Georgia fans about Kirby Smart actually executing the plan that he set in motion on signing day of 2016. They're going to get in early on guys. They won't get them all. You can't get them all. You probably don't even want them all, actually, but you do want to be in on every player that could potentially be good enough to play at Georgia, and you want those guys to have a relationship with you that dates back years so that when they ultimately make their decision, that Georgia gives those guys a lot to think of. It may or may not still work out with Georgia and Warren Brinson, and Warren Brinson may or may not turn out to be the kind of player that Georgia really wishes it had, but if you're a Georgia fan investigating the process, the process that Georgia's using for players like Warren Brinson, I think it's something you ought to feel plenty good about. All right, something else you ought to feel plenty good about here on the subject of recruiting for a moment. I know there was the Rivals.com report about Nick Cross, the four-star defensive back, which we talked about on the program yesterday, not taking an official visit to Georgia over the weekend. He's obviously going to Penn State, but Rivals is reporting that he's going to take an unofficial visit to Georgia at some point in time this week. Now, I thought it was interesting yesterday that when we talked to Jeff and tell about this. Based on the previous conversation we've had when it comes to Cross, one of those final members that could join Georgia in its 2019 class, you know, I've always kind of posed it to Jeff, and he's always kind of posed it back to us. If that official visit doesn't take place, that might be bad news for Georgia. So what I said to Jeff was, well, I guess that's it. He's going to Happy Valley. He's going to State College. That means that Nick Cross is not coming to Georgia. Now listen to this. Hindsight being 2020 now, when this came up with Jeff Sintel yesterday on Nick Cross, listen to the cryptic message from Jeff on Cross. Not necessarily throwing in the white flag on behalf of Georgia, throwing in the towel on behalf of Georgia when it comes to Nick Cross. What we know now makes what Jeff said yesterday seem a little more interesting. Here is Jeff yesterday on this program on the subject of Nick Cross. Take a listen.
Nick Cross has been to Georgia. He's taken some unofficials to Georgia. He's been there for a game day. I think in his heart of hearts, when the in-home visits, and if he truly wants to go to Georgia, I think he's seen enough there to pull the trigger on Georgia. To me, this is just an example of there are other schools to think about here aside from Georgia.
So listen. I thought it was very interesting, especially now, given the fact that the conversation was already out there. They Cross might indeed be back on the Georgia campus. That Jeff says, oh, don't be so quick to assume that the final nail is in this coffin just because Cross won't take the official visit to Georgia this weekend. That's Jeff maybe giving a little hope to UGA fans. Cross is a player I think a lot of Georgia fans would like to have as a part of this class, joining Kyra Lam as two defensive backs to close this thing out with. I think it's also interesting at the end of that clip, Jeff also references, also don't be so quick to assume this is just a Georgia-Penn State battle. After all, he's still committed to Florida State and, you know, Cross himself kind of put this out there on social media. Now, he's since deleted this tweet, but there's the edit of Cross with what I guess is a Final Four. In fact, that's what the initial tweet was about, was announcing his top four, the school that he's committed to, Florida State, Penn State, where he's visiting this weekend, Maryland, which is a little bit of a geographic tie, and Georgia, the school that we care about. Now, he's since deleted that tweet, which I guess is now an example of recruits are going to start treating Twitter almost like an Instagram story, where these things may stay up for 24 hours and they may come down. Zachary Evans did about the same thing over the weekend too. But nonetheless, these are just parts of the twists and turns that exist before signing day. The 2020 cycle of Warren Brinson, that'll play itself out over the course of the next few months. But it's really just a few days left to decide how these 2019 storylines are going to finish up. Georgia's got a few spots left. It wants the best players that it can get. And I guess we'll all wait with bated breath to find out if Nick Cross is one of those guys. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you. Thanks for being with us live on video today, 10 a.m. Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio at noon, of course, on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rev. Had a good time being with the folks in Athens today. I love being on there every Wednesday morning. We're also available as a podcast, Apple Podcasts, the Google Podcast Player, the world-famous DogNation.com. However you find the show, we're glad that you found us today. Later on, I've got a really fascinating interview on a play that we did Monday night with Dante Hightower, the New England Patriots defensive back, a guy that played for Kirby Smart at the University of Alabama. Dante's got some great things to say about Smart. Smart was clearly a big influence on him. We'll let you hear that coming up a little bit later on. That's going to be a really fun conversation that I think will make you feel good about the brand that Kirby Smart's building, not just the UGA brand, but the Smart brand individually with some of these Alabama guys that he coached who still give Smart a ton of credit for their success. You'll like that coming up in just a moment. Before that, though, let's go around the doghouse here today, brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And I want to keep the theme going before we talk to Mike Griffith in a couple of minutes. I want to keep the theme going of Georgia being a hot topic, UGA being a hot topic of conversation around the Super Bowl. Once again, as I said, we were Monday night at the brand new State Farm Arena for the event they call Super Bowl Opening Night. We played some of this for you yesterday, and throughout the rest of the week, we're going to give you some of the stuff that we were able to capture, including what I want you to see and hear right now, which was a terrific conversation, a fascinating conversation we were able to have with a former Georgia running back, now L.A. Rams superstar, Todd Gurley. And boy, let me tell you, I don't say the word superstar lightly, but Gurley, when he comes out, and you'll, if you're watching on video, you'll see this for yourself, he's got shades on, he's got the gold chain, he's just very comfortable in his own skin. For a kid that entered Georgia from Tarboro, North Carolina, he's a little bit of a shy young man who had, you know, grown up in a very small town. Boy, the big city looks good on Gurley now. So he's feeling pretty good about himself. And he's also really proud of his Georgia roots. And, you know, listen, I know this storyline is going to be beaten to death by the time Sunday gets here, but I don't think it's an insignificant one. I think the fact that guys like Gurley are as proud of Georgia as they are really does mean something for UGA. In fact, let me let you see and hear with your own eyes and ears exactly what Gurley had to say. It's the biggest game of his football life on Sunday coming up, and Gurley's remembering where he came from. He knows what he learned, what was instilled in him at UGA is a big part of his football story. In fact, here as part of Around the Doghouse presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia is Todd Gurley with us talking about just that.
That's one of the main reasons I picked Georgia. I wanted to be in SEC, and it's a lot of great ball players. Obviously, guys all around this league, so it was definitely a good decision for me. I know how I feel to have one Georgia running back, and it's like, no, now I haven't got a chance to talk to him, man. Super, super excited for Sony, though. Congratulations to him. He's one lucky guy. But, no, it's a good feeling just to be able to play here in the state of Georgia and then to come back here and play in the Super Bowl, then to play against, you know, Sony, who was under me. So it's pretty cool. Super exciting just for us to be here and for him to be here. So super excited to be back here. Oh, it means a lot. Show me how to be a man. You know, just gave me all the great friends that I have today. And, you know, it just gave me a lot of great relationships. And I went to the best school in the world. So I'm super excited to be able to go to Georgia. Georgia, I definitely wanted to play in the SEC. And, you know, to be able to go to Georgia and play under Coach Rick, Coach Bumack, have guys like Ron Corson, Aaron Murray, you know, Keith Marshall, all those guys, man, you know, they taught me a lot. So, you know, I can definitely say, you know, that was one of the best decisions I ever made in my life was choosing the University of Georgia.
don't ever fool yourself that the job of being, you know, a podcast, video host, reporter, interviewer, camera person, don't ever confuse yourself that this is some sort of glamorous life. And I'm not complaining. This was, you know, all said pretty fun. But the work we had to go, the physical toll that we it took on us to kind of cram in there in front of Todd Gurley to get those questions in with him was pretty wild on Monday. It was unbelievable, the environment around Gurley and the Rams and the Patriots when they had their moment as well. The media, a throng that was gathered around was pretty incredible. You had to throw a couple elbows. You had to post up a little bit, but we finally got some time with Mr. Gurley. I was really glad we got to do that. I'm really proud to see the NFL player that he's turned out to be, and I tell you, it was really fun to get a chance to hear from him how much he still loves and cares with the University of Georgia. That was a lot of fun there that night. It's Around the Doghouse is presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, providing foundation repair, basement waterproofing, crawl space encapsulation, and a whole lot more, including a lifetime of support. So you're going to want to give them a call, whether you've got a crack foundation or a wet basement or a damp crawl space, whatever you have going on. After some of the rain we've gotten the last couple of days, a cold, damp basement is not what you want. So get that taken care of right now and have one of the qualified professional technicians come out to check out your home and get it back to where it needs to be. It's the only foundation you repair the Dog Nation would trust because it's the only one that has a full-time engineer on staff. So the best news of all is reaching out to Engineered Solutions of Georgia is really easy to do. Simply give them a call at 678 ESOG now. That number once again, 678 ESOG now. And I can promise you, you'll be really glad that you did. All right, that's not the only Super Bowl interview we've got for you in the program today. As we said later on, it's Dante Hightower from the New England Patriots talking about his time working with Kirby Smart. You're going to really like that. He also has kind of a funny thing to say about the relationship that Smart and Saban might have with each other. That's fun for later on. For now, though, let's get ready to talk to our buddy Mike Griffith, and it's great to have you with us today on Dog Nation Daily.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Mike Griffith, of course, always great to be with us here on Dog Nation Daily each week, doing great stuff at DogNation.com. Mike, welcome back to the program. I hope you're doing well back from being in Mobile, Alabama last week. Welcome back to the state of Georgia, and I hope you're doing well, as I said.
No doubt about it, B.A. Glad to be back.
So I do have a little bit of a bone to pick with you. I was on with my friends this morning on 960 The Ref in Athens, and they were saying that earlier in the week you were kind of downplaying the presence of Sony Michel and Todd Gurley in the Super Bowl. You know, from my perspective, when you hear Gurley talking right there the way that we did, I think that's a pretty good commercial for UGA, Mike. And I got to tell you, if Georgia wanted to pay for that kind of advertising this week with the Super Bowl, that's an eight-figure investment. That's upwards of $100 million of free media that guys like Gurley, Michelle, and David Andrews are giving UGA. I think all this is working out pretty well for the UGA brand this week, I would have to say.
Oh, there's no question. It's a great commercial for Georgia. And obviously, I went on the Ref Monday morning before Gurley made all those great statements about Georgia. And certainly when you've got a superstar, a bona fide superstar talking about Georgia, even if he is, just watching your video a minute ago, even if he is talking about Mark Richt instead of Kirby Smart, I mean, he's still endorsing the University of Georgia, and there are a lot of guys that'll look up to Todd Gurley and maybe put Georgia on their radar to the point where maybe they take a visit someday, or maybe they even commit, like that defensive tackle down there at IMG. So I do think that it helps Georgia out. I just don't think there's a direct correlation of somebody saying, oh, well, Todd Gurley went to Georgia, so I'm going to go to Georgia. Just like I've pointed out, Tom Brady went to Michigan and Peyton Manning went to Tennessee, and I haven't seen great quarterbacks at those schools since those two played at those schools.
I do think you bring up a really interesting point, though, when it comes to a lot of these guys, as you said, like Gurley and Andrews as well. They are guys who played for the previous coaching staff. And so what I think that speaks to is kind of a procedural issue for Georgia. And it seems like Kirby Smart's probably done a pretty good job of this, of making guys that didn't play for Kirby feel at home as a part of Kirby's program. You know, you're at every one of these games, of course, Mike, and you see during every break in the football action, seemingly every one of those breaks is at least a lot of them involve bringing back some sort of former player and say, hey, let's welcome back, you know, whichever player it is to the Georgia. He gets a big ovation, gets his face right there in the video board. And that's just, I guess, just one example of some of the stuff that goes down here. But it does seem like Kirby has done a pretty good job of creating some sort of outreach program to make guys who didn't play for Kirby feel like they know Kirby and feel like they're a part of this Georgia program. And I know all college coaches seem to try to do that when they take jobs. I guess some probably do it a little bit more effectively than others. And it seems like from Georgia's standpoint, it seems like it's been pretty effective with that.
No doubt. And it's a two-way street, B.A. These guys want to pull for their school and put their advertise their school when their school's winning. I mean, Kirby Smart has won a lot of football games at Georgia and made it a little bit better and a little bit bigger to be a former Georgia Bulldog if you're in an NFL locker room. And you're talking about your team and you're making those side bets with your teammates. You know, the next step is, can Georgia get the kind of donations from the NFL players with the huge contracts like Tennessee's gotten from Peyton Manning? I mean, you go down there and you look at the Peyton Manning recruiting room, and I'm still looking for a Matt Stafford recruiting room at Georgia, not to say that he hasn't donated, but we haven't seen the type of donations from the great Georgia players that we've seen other places. And, you know, right now Georgia's in a place where if they want to continue to take these steps and compete for national championships, they got to keep their facilities on par with Clemson and Alabama. And I know there's been a lot of talk about a new football building. That needs to happen. That's important. That's very important for Georgia. You've got the coaching staff in place. You've certainly got the fan base. And as you've pointed out, they've got the momentum now. They've got the marquee NFL players talking about Georgia. So you got to complete the puzzle. You got to build the football building, and you got to keep Georgia at the top of the heap.
Yeah, that'll certainly be a really fun story to watch develop as Georgia does look to make those advances with its facilities. You also had a really interesting report at Dog Nation this week about, I guess now we'll say, former Tennessee tight end Eli Wolf and some potential interest between Wolf and the University of Georgia. Mike, what can you tell us more about that scenario? We know that Georgia needs tight ends. How do you think that Wolf could fit into this story for UGA?
I think he'd fit in perfect. Isaac Nauta came to Georgia as the number one tight end in the country, and people can debate whether or not he, you know, put up numbers of the number one tight end. I think he was pretty darn good, and when I talked with Isaac this year, you know, the thing I told him that impressed me so much was he always made the plays in the big games. You never saw Isaac Nauta with a drop or a bad play. It was always Nauta making big plays when Georgia needed it. And I thought he was a real go-to guy. And, you know, Jim Chaney even said at the Sugar Bowl press conference that, you know, you had to be a dummy to think they shouldn't have used him more. And ironically enough, you know, Jim Chaney goes to Tennessee and Eli Wolf decides to transfer. Now, here's the thing about the Wolf family. His older brother Ethan played there. I thought really stepped up and had a great senior year. I believe he was with the Green Bay Packers on the practice squad. And Eli, while not quite as big as Ethan, is a really tough kid. And he's an SEC veteran. You know, he had a catch in five straight games for Tennessee last year, a touchdown catch against South Carolina. He's about the same size, build, if not a. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that he's Isaac Nauta. I don't think that. But I do think he's a very capable player. And when you look at the need that Georgia has with only two healthy scholarship guys returning, and, you know, some people might say, well, that's two, that's plenty. Well, it's really not. Georgia likes to do a lot of ace formation, double tight end. You want to really have four or five healthy guys there. So it's a neat spot for Georgia. And Eli comes in or would come in as a guy with SEC experience, with a tremendous opportunity. You know, all of a sudden he would be at a place where he could compete for a national championship, presto, that quick. Now, we've seen before there's no guarantees that transfers are going to work out. You know, I think we were all a little disappointed Demetrius Robertson didn't do more. Georgia had a great receiving corps. Turned out he wasn't able to beat those guys out and get on the field. Or Jay Hayes from Notre Dame. We thought maybe he'd have an impact. And really, he wasn't able to. So there's no guarantee that a transfer is going to work. That says a lot about how good the talent is that's here already. But in the case of tight end, it's a numbers game. And Georgia needs tight ends. And if they could get an SEC-ready tight end, not necessarily a star, B.A., but just someone
that could handle that role, I think it would be good for Georgia, and I think it would be good for Eli. Classy kid. Tennessee took him to SEC Media Day. That says a lot about a kid when a coach takes him to the SEC Media Days.
So I can give you my opinion on this, and I would never pretend that my thinking is going to match up perfectly with Kirby Smart and James Coley's, but my thinking on this is when you look at the Georgia tight end position, first of all, I agree with you that Georgia needs more depth there. When it comes to the Nada role, I feel really pretty good about Charlie Werner in that role. I think that Werner's an athletic playmaker, maybe a little less athletic than Nada, maybe, but it may not be enough to truly make a difference. I think Werner can make the catches that Nada made a year ago. Where I think you're 100% right, it's that spot opposite of Nada. When Georgia does use, or I guess Werner, when Georgia does use those tight end sets, you're going to have that guy that's going to be a blocking tight end for you. And when I look at Eli Wolf, maybe that's what he is, maybe it's not. I don't know that I have a good sense of that one way or another. I said yesterday, though, Mike, that to the extent that the Dog Nation daily endorsement means anything, I'm kind of endorsing John Fitzpatrick to get a look here, a healthy Ryland Goedy to get a look here. I wouldn't mind seeing Georgia bring in a tight end. For me, though, if it brings someone to the program, it's got to be someone who's an obvious blocker, maybe a little bit bigger than the 235 pounds that Eli Wolf is listed at. You know, that's just my opinion. I'm not going to tell you that's, you know, the absolute gospel when it comes to this situation. But if Georgia brings in the transfer tight end, I want him to definitely be a blocker, almost like a third offensive tackle. And I don't know what that's what Eli Wolf is, given his specs. I'm almost more in favor of seeing more of John Fitzpatrick and Ryland Goedy.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Like I said, there's a lot of talent in there, and I'm sure the Georgia coaches had the same discussion before they made Eli Wolf the scholarship offer. So they would probably know more about it than I would as far as the need. You know, I just look at it on paper and see two healthy scholarship tight ends returning, and you think to yourself, my goodness, what if one of them gets hurt? What if Charlie Werner gets hurt? You know, now you have nobody with experience playing the tight end position, and what that does is it limits the playbook. It takes an entire package out of the playbook, and I think what Georgia wants to do is try and maintain that continuity. That's why they promoted James Coley to offensive coordinator. They want to keep on keeping on. They're not looking for wholesale changes. I don't think you're going to see the offense look a whole lot different. The differences you'll see maybe are some different guys in different places. They can do different things, and that may change the progression order, or it may change the balance of play calls. We may see more throws to the running back. I think DeAndre Swift, with a healthy offseason, certainly is a legitimate Heisman candidate. I think 2,000 total yards is a possibility, as crazy as that might sound. I think Swift is on the verge of a huge season. And to me, the continuity is important. And you know, you take out a 6'4", 240-pound tight end, B.A., and you plug in a 6'4", 236-pound tight end who's played in the SEC. Now, I think John Fitzpatrick is a wonderful prospect. I have no doubt about it that he can play the game. But even if you bring Wolf in, you're still talking right now about only three scholarship tight ends on your roster. And as you pointed out, when you play that two tight end set, there's really not a lot of depth.
I think that's a really good point. You also wrote something at Dog Nation this week that I wanted to get into a bit, and in terms of the draft status. Now, DeAndre Baker is the name that's going to show up the most frequently in UGA-related draft conversations, but for now, I want to push Baker to the side and look at the wide receiver position, because you referenced Daniel Jeremiah, a scout that I do like, and I guess he's got, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on my numbers here, he's got Riley listed as the number 32 prospect, which obviously 32 is a key number, because that could get Riley, or I should say Ridley, that could get Ridley into the first round. And that to me is really interesting, especially when you think about Terry Godwin, who is the Shrine Bowl MVP, Mecole Hardman, who has the added value of also being a special teams guy. For a Georgia wide receiver core that I think is dealing with a little bit of a branding issue, I think that Georgia needs to show that it can put wide receivers in the NFL. If you were able to produce a first-round pick and then three guys on active rosters next September, if that indeed happens, all former Georgia wide receivers, I think that has to help a bit. And I guess there's a chance that could happen, that the NFL does view Godwin somewhat favorably, at least enough to be on a roster, the same way with Mecole Hardman, enough to be on a roster, and Ridley, who may indeed have a chance to impress over the next few weeks. To me, Mike, it'd be immeasurably valuable for Georgia if those three wide receivers could have success in landing on an NFL roster. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. You know, I think it would be huge. I mean, the more Georgia players you see in the league, certainly the better. And, you know, really, if you look at, you know, the college football playoff era, you know, Georgia's right there with Alabama. I mean, they're neck and neck. It's funny, B.A., I do a weekly show in Alabama, and then from time to time, I saw you did Feinbaum, and, you know, I do him now and then. And the people in Alabama always want to ask, what does Georgia think about Alabama this, and what does Georgia think about Alabama that? And I'll tell you, in that football building, these guys are so dialed in on their own stuff. I just don't sense that. Now, you may have a different perspective in Atlanta, and certainly year-round fans a lot more than I am, and maybe fans have that concern. But when I talk with the coaches and the players, they don't give a damn about Alabama. They're worried about Georgia. And as I explained, the reason why is because for, you know, what, 281 out of 290 plays, Georgia's been even or led Alabama in 118-54 out of 120 minutes. And you can say, yeah, they lost in the long run. But the bottom line is everybody in that Butch-Mir, Heritage Hall, they know that they're not only on par with Alabama, but they've had Alabama beat twice. So I don't sense the envy. Now, that said, from a recruiting standpoint and from a perception standpoint, I would agree that the more players that Georgia has in high-profile positions, whether it's at the Super Bowl or it's going in the NFL draft, I still think most importantly, I reel it back to the recruiting class and the perception. Is Georgia still 1, 2, 3 in the country? Are they still getting more commits than decommits? Which way is the arrow pointing? How is the momentum? I think this class is pivotal, and that's why I paid more attention to Jeff Centel's reports this year than ever before, because I think this is a very important year, and I think this is a very important class for Georgia to close out right now. More important than Super Bowl running backs, more important than NFL numbers, I think prospects want to see if Georgia is still the hot place to be, one. And two, I think they want to know what type of facilities they're going to be in, and Georgia needs to get that football building built.
Let me finish with this. I asked you about this last week, and literally nothing has changed, but people want it to be asked again, so I will. What's going on with this defensive coordinator search? Or not even search, but the lack of defensive coordinator announcement, I guess, is the best thing, Mike. Any evolution to your opinion from a week ago on that?
Listen, let me tell you, you just jarred my brain. I'm not kidding you. This is when you know you're a beat writer. Actually had a dream. I talked to Kirby Smart on the phone about it last night. I was interviewing, and I'm asking these questions. The interview is going really well. He's answering question one. He's answering question two. And I try and be sly, and I go, what are you going to do about the defensive coordinator position? And he laughs, and I wake up. Does that tell you where I'm at? I mean, seriously, that's a true story. I dreamed that last night, and I said to Kirby, so what are you going to do? And he laughs, and I say, I just tell people Kirby's going to Kirby. And I wake up, and I think, you know what? I'm not getting an answer. I can't even get an answer in my dreams of what he's going to do. So I really don't know. I mean, this is as stumped as I've been. I mean, I you know, there's some speculation that, you know, look, you know, they've got to figure out what they're, you know, to me, one of the big things that's got to happen, we talk about staff chemistry, how important that is. I mean, look, they got to figure out how they're going to split the pie. They got a lot of money to spread out. Plus, we don't know if I would think that they've had their assistant coaching salary pool raised. So they got to spread the money out in a way that's going to make everybody happy. And they've got to figure out, as far as titles go, who needs to be what. And then you just got to leave that little spot in the back of your mind wondering, does Kirby Smart have one more move to make? Could there be an assistant coach leaving? Is there a mystery coach who's leaving after signing day that we don't know about? That would certainly make it all make sense. We just don't know right now. So, like I said, I couldn't get the answer in my dreams last night. I certainly don't have it today.
Mike, I really appreciate that. It's a fun conversation, and we'll look forward to following your coverage of it as it stretches on, both in your dreams and, I guess, in real life as well. Mike, we'll read a bunch from you at DogNation.com and talk to you soon.
It's a dream working with you, B.A. I appreciate it.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, there you go. That's what the dream life of Dog Nation reporters, I guess, looks like. So do with that what you will. Nonetheless, you know, I thought it was interesting, Mike, you know, getting into the subject of those receivers going to the NFL. Mike says, hey, I think it's great for Georgia anytime it puts guys on NFL rosters. And I think that's generally true, but specifically for me, if Georgia could come September and show dogs in the NFL, Mecole Hardman playing for the blah, 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 and Terry Gowan playing for the whomever, and Riley Ridley as a pretty high draft pick playing for whatever team, I think that'd go a long way towards connecting back to what Bill Belichick said this week that we highlighted yesterday, that Georgia's the kind of school that can put players in the NFL. It's the kind of school that trains players for the NFL. I think recruits mostly believe that about UGA, but there's skepticism for Georgia seemingly at the wide receiver position. And if you put three guys into the league from that position group this year, that would go a long way towards combating against that because, I mean, maybe there's more than I realize, but, you know, how many programs will put three players from one draft class, wide receivers, into the league? Now, it remains to be seen if all three of those guys will land on and find teams, but obviously around here we're hoping to see that happen. So kind of fun stuff with Mike Griffith. By the way, we're getting ready for the big game on Sunday, and Kroger's certainly giving you a chance to do that. Four big days of saving coming up. It starts today, and you can download your Kroger coupons at the Kroger app or Kroger.com, and then actually you can start redeeming those starting tomorrow all the way through Sunday, February 3rd. That's this upcoming Sunday. All kinds of items for your party, including smoked sausage, Kroger chicken wings, select snack items, and so much more. So download the coupon starting today, Kroger.com or the Kroger app, and you can start redeeming those starting tomorrow. So listen, I know a lot of y'all have a lot of people coming over. You got to try to find a way to feed them in sort of a cost-efficient manner. Well, Kroger's got you taken care of on that. So download those coupons and get ready to start saving Thursday through the rest of the weekend for your big game party coming up then. All right, Dante Hightower coming up with us. Patriots defensive back, really interesting look at his time with Kirby Smart. You're going to really like this. He has some interesting things to say. We'll do that coming up in a couple of minutes. Before that, though, SEC through time and Caesar's Palace among the sports books out there now. With some national championship odds. They've updated these. And Georgia's pretty good shape here, 6-1 for the national championship. There are a couple of SEC teams I want you to pay close attention to, though. I want you to look at Texas A&M and LSU, both according to Caesar's Palace at 30-1. Now, I'm not telling you either of these teams win the national championship, but I'm telling you, if you're shopping around for some odds, both those teams at 30-1, I don't think it's a bad play. Now, LSU's got a ton to replace on defense, and Jimbo Fisher's obviously still in the early stages of building what he's building at Texas A&M. But I believe that both LSU and Texas A&M, I think, are potential threats to Alabama next season, especially given the fact Alabama has to go to Auburn. Now, Auburn may not be good enough to win the West, but an Auburn win in the Iron Bowl could be dangerous to another team that can build up a record. So pay attention to A&M and LSU, both at 30-1. That's just a little nugget to push aside for later. Likely to end up being wrong, but it's at least something to think about. Speaking of Auburn, I thought there was an interesting piece at Sports Illustrated looking at the teams that were bad last season that might bounce back this year. And there's a whole kinds of like national teams mentioned here. Auburn gets a mention here, too. And the explanation from the author from Sports Illustrated goes like this. The optimism for 2019 revolves around Gus Malzahn, who reclaimed play-calling duties. I love that description of the play-calling duties as if that's like ransacking Rome. They've reclaimed play-calling duties after a regular season and promptly directed a 63-14 win over Purdue in the Music City Bowl. Always should be a red alert when a bowl game is used of proof of what's going to happen over the course of an entire season. But nonetheless, the writer goes on to say, when his spread run game is clicking, all five offensive line starters are expected back, along with the top two backs. Auburn is always a threat to compete for championships. So I do expect Auburn to be better next season. I think the chance of Auburn being a top 25 team in a relatively dangerous road game for Georgia, I think there's some likelihood of that occurring. But if you want to talk about Auburn really bouncing back to where it was in 2017 when it was a threat to win the entire league, the one big question we're going to spend a lot of the offseason wrestling with is who the Auburn starting quarterback is going to be. I've said before, I'm not a believer in the two guys that are on campus that would seem to be in this conversation. Malik Willis, I just don't see as a prospect the way that other people have. Joey Gatewood, I'm not even sure Gatewood actually is a quarterback. Bo Nix coming in as a freshman. This doesn't feel, the 2019 class and the quarterbacks it produced, doesn't really feel like the kind of class that's going to produce a great starter in the SEC as a freshman. I don't think that Nix is that guy. So Auburn may be dangerous on a game-to-game basis, but they are probably, to me, a quarterback away from really being a major competitor. And then one more SEC story to get to before we hear from Dante Hightower. ESPN has got some stuff out there about reasons for optimism for its way to early top 25 teams. We'll talk later in the week about what they say about Georgia. I wanted to mention what the folks, Andrea Adelson writing this, said about Florida, expecting some progress on offense from the Gators. Obviously, Felipe Franks is coming back. I don't know. Is that a good thing or not? Franks seemed to have some up and down. I do think that they are helped by the return of Van Jefferson as a wide receiver who's chosen to stay. I think some of that stuff helps a bit. They're probably relatively deep at the wide receiver position for me, and I guess I'm going to spend some time diving into this over the course of the next couple of weeks. I'm honestly not sure who's going to run the football for Florida. And, you know, I don't know that Dan Mullen has a history of producing great running backs, but if you want to really be successful in the SEC, ESPN has Florida right now in its wake to early poll as a preseason number 7. Not without a running game. I'm sorry. You're just not going to do that. You got to have that really good-looking running game. And Damian Pierce in his second season, I don't know if that's the nucleus of a great running game. Yeah, y'all know I don't like Florida. Maybe this is just a biased opinion. But as it stands right now, I think some of that, you know, hope on the side of the Florida offense is certainly overstated, but nonetheless, we'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, as promised, we've had a lot of really fun interviews this week with participants in this year's Super Bowl, both guys that played for Georgia and, in the case of the guy we're about to hear from, a guy who played with Kirby Smart at Alabama. It's Dante Hightower, one of the impact players for the New England Patriots, and he gets into the relationship that he had with Kirby Smart, the influence that Smart had on his football career. He also says something kind of funny about the way in which that Smart was able to withstand the long haul with Nick Saban, a way that a lot of coaches haven't been able to do. I enjoyed this discussion. I think it illuminates a little bit about what's made Kirby Smart the successful coach that he is. Here's Dante Hightower from Monday as part of Dog Nation Daily.
It was great. Kirby's—he's a great coach. I think a lot of things that he's doing in Georgia is—I wouldn't expect anything different. He's a great coach, very devoted to his players. I think that was one thing that really kind of stuck out with a lot of guys back when we was at Bama. Was one thing we was all close. It wasn't just the players; it was the coaches too. So I'm sure he's just bringing that same atmosphere to Georgia.
You know, a lot of Alabama assistants haven't lasted long; that they tend to come and go. He lasted for a long time with Coach Saban before he moved on to Georgia. What do you think it was about Kirby that made him different than some of the other guys who've cycled through Alabama a lot more quickly than that?
I don't know. I don't know how he could put up with Nick like that anyway. All seriousness though, but you know, those two, it was time where those two would go back and forth, but it's obviously a relationship that as a player you would love to see your DC and your coach being so close.
Do you still pay close attention to the SEC? I know you've got your own playing career that you're worried about.
Absolutely, man. I still watch, and I'm still pulling for Kirby. I still watch Jeremy Pruitt. I still watch all my guys, man.
How much fun is it to see the relationship, the rivalry that's really kind of budding between Alabama and Georgia right now? How much fun is that for you to see?
I honestly didn't expect anything different. Like I said, Kirby and Nick are two great guys, and I used to love seeing them together in the meet room, and now they're going back and forth, so it's awesome.
You know, you got a good bit of Georgia guys in this roster right now: Sony Michel, David Boss Andrews, Isaiah Wynn, who's obviously hurt. But what's it been like having those extra Georgia SEC guys in your locker room right now?
Always open to having more SEC guys in there, and I haven't been around too many bad Georgia guys, so as long as they keep coming in like this, I'll be fine with it.
So I really enjoyed that, a chance to talk to Dante Hightower, and I do think it speaks well of Kirby Smart that these guys still feel connected to him. And I don't want to read too much into this because, you know, listen, for the most part, most of these players are just in a good mood about being in the Super Bowl, so they're going to say something nice about whatever you ask them about because they're just excited about being in Atlanta for the big game. But, you know, compare this to a moment with like Jalen Ramsey, for instance, who didn't like Jimbo Fisher trying to reference Ramsey once he took the Texas A&M job. You know, Ramsey saying, hey, I'm a Florida State guy. You know, I don't want to be viewed as giving credit to Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M because that's not the school that I went to. Like I said, I don't want to read too much in that and saying that, you know, Hightower and Mark Barron, who we heard from on DN90 yesterday, are vouching for Smart over Alabama. That's not what I'm saying there. But they certainly, you know, are not sidestepping the opportunity to give Kirby Smart some credit for that. So Smart, even before he became a head coach, was good at building those relationships. And, you know, once again, you know, recruits want to believe the pipeline exists to the NFL. when you got guys like Hightower sitting there in that podium getting ready to play in the Super Bowl, how can you deny that opportunity doesn't exist when you play for Kirby Smart? So, with that said, it's a busy day for us on this Wednesday. We're back later on this afternoon with Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger. Good-looking opportunity to talk some recruit stuff there. By the way, Trayvon Walker, really fun interview we're going to do. It'll be a part of Before the Hedges later on this afternoon, so come on back for that. I'll also tell you it's now been 823 days since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten Georgia. We think that number's going up, and we love the fact that good Georgia fans are Gator haters. Gator Hater Updater right here on Dog Nation Daily. Also, let me mention, Georgia drops a game last night at Bud Walton Arena to Arkansas. Kind of a weird confluence of events in that, so Georgia beats Texas. Texas goes last night and beats Kansas, and then Georgia, after getting a good Big 12 win, loses to Arkansas. Offensive issues once again. I'm not quite sure what you do about all that, at least this year. I guess you'll turn your attention to recruiting for the time to come, and we'll see you tomorrow here on Dog Nation Daily.